Hello and welcome to the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, an SB Nation blog dedicated to your Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm your host, PD, and this week I want to focus on the most important game of the week. No, it's not against the Rangers, it's not against the Predators. It's a game against the Ducks. The results of this game could have massive impacts on Connor Bedard's future. And so I brought on a special guest, Steven, from the Forever Mighty podcast, to talk about the Anaheim Ducks. Steven, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's nice to be able to talk to someone who's about as equally sad and angry as I on the basis. So.
Yeah. So before we get into talking about this year's edition of the team, talk a little bit about yourself. How long have you been a Ducks fan? What's been your journey there? How did you get into blogging and potting about the Ducks?
I mean, I've been a Ducks fan pretty much my whole life. I grew up in Southern California, and especially in the early days of the Ducks, they were terrible and the tickets were cheap. So, you know, it was easy for us to go. My dad's a Kings fan. My uncle's a Ducks fan. So I've always kind of been aware of both, which has been both a gift and a curse at different times. But yeah, so, you know, just kind of that way, just, you know, I mean, the first game I ever remember going to was Team Solani scoring a hat trick against the Wayne Gretzky St. Louis Blues.
Wow.
So it's just like a super weird like thing. Uh-huh. I was really lucky to be in the building when they won game 5 against Ottawa for the Stanley Cup, yeah, which was super cool. Beyond that, you know, I mean, growing up in Southern California, there hasn't always been a ton of people to talk hockey with. Mm-hmm. So as much as I've hated it, watching the Kings be successful has been great for that. And you know, I just kind of found my way to the Anaheim Calling website, which RIP a little bit on the little bit under the dirt right now. But, you know, just doing that. And then I wrote for the Hockey Writers for a little bit. And that's kind of how I found one of the guys I podcast with now, Eddie, who's the main guy I podcast with. And he was just asked me to fill in one time, and then it just kind of worked. And so I've been doing that for, oh God, 2 years now? Almost two and a half years. Because I think the COVID shortened year was the first year I started doing stuff with them. So, you know, it's been a couple of years. It's been a really weird time. There's been a lot to be happy about, a lot to be very sad about.
Right.
You know. So, yeah, it's just been weird, but it's been fun and it's been a blast. It's been nice to be able to talk Ducks hockey with people and meet different people and stuff like that. So it's been cool, man.
Yeah, and it has been a rough few years here for the Ducks. It feels to me like they were a consistently competitive team for, you know, a decade or so there after winning the Cup, and then just suddenly fell off a cliff. Did it feel that way to you as well, or did you kind of see the end coming for that core of the team?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both for me personally, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think if you're a little bit better about being objective in the middle of it happening, you can kind of see the end of the road coming. But, you know, I mean, more than anything, like, the Ryan Kesler injury just completely derailed the team's ability to be competitive for the last little bit of the Twins window, and then you had the Corey Perry buyout, and that was all weird and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, we saw the guys getting older, and we knew it was kind of coming, but there were a couple of little players here and there that you hoped would be able to kind of hold the window open a little longer than they were able to, and most of those guys are on other teams now. So you know, so yeah, to like watch Hampus Lindholm be great, watch Josh Manson be great is very hard, but it's wonderful to watch them kind of have the success that they're having right now.
Got it. Yeah. Now, last year's team, actually very similar to Columbus. I feel like in the fall of 21, you had Columbus and Anaheim as two unexpectedly good teams and were in the playoff race around Thanksgiving. And then I think no one was surprised when both of those teams kind of hit the wall and fell off a bit. So coming into this year, what were your expectations for the team? Did you think they would be able to build on that, or did you think it was going to be another hard year?
I was pretty certain this year was going to suck.
Okay.
because Ryan Getzlaf, this is the first year the team hasn't had him. Yeah. Like, I mean, he just meant so much to the organization, not only on the ice, but just off the ice, and what he did for the organization. He was the temple that the whole thing was built around. Right. You know, so to not have him here has been really weird, and you can see different parts of the season where the team struggles, and you're like, oh, it would have been nice to have like big brother around to be like, yeah, it's going to be okay. But you know, the two guys I mentioned earlier, Manson and Lindholm, for me, that was the big one. Like, this team doesn't have a strong enough defensive group that I felt like they were going to be able to be competitive on most nights. And some of the young forwards are still doing well. And, you know, you guys know all about this. There's ups and downs with different young guys and 2 years forward, 1 year back, all that kind of stuff. You know, and it's just been kind of weird. Like, Mason McTavish has been having a nice year. He's gotten stronger as the year has gone on, which has been great. Trevor Zegras and Troy Terry both look really good. The Jamie Treisdale injury, you know, was a real kick in the pants. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say that I think in a lot of ways this year has kind of gone about as bad as I expected to, though I think on a nightly basis, the lows have been a little bit lower than maybe you wanted to admit coming in. You know, 7-1, 6-1 loss to like the Sharks can be pretty humbling.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Well, and that's the last 2 years I've been repeating this refrain of, I want the team to be bad but fun. Like, I can understand if there's going to be growing pains and there's going to be losses, but like, at least be competitive, at least score goals. Like, if we're going to lose, like, I'm okay losing a high scoring game. Mm-hmm. And last year's Jackets team, I felt like definitely fit that bill, where that was a team that had a lot of comeback wins, and they had a lot of guys having career years and all that. But then this year's team has been just bad. They don't have comeback wins. They quit. They don't score a lot of goals. And that part is really frustrating. That makes it just kind of a slog. Now, for the Ducks last year, it seemed like a dividing line in that season was the GM change. Now, that wasn't just for hockey reasons, obviously.
Right.
But then it felt like when they hired Pat Verbeek that he made the decision in advance of the deadline to go ahead and really tear it down and trade off every asset that they could. And seemed to get a lot in return for guys like Josh Manson and Hampus Lindholm. Were you okay with that decision to tear it down, or did you think the team should have tried to build on what they had?
No, I think it was the right decision. I think, you know, the circumstances around Bob Murray's departure were weird and awkward and, you know, gross, if you want to use that word. I think it's fair. You know, but the real big question for last season was like, is Bob Murray, who was notoriously kind of a double down kind of guy, is he going to be willing to make the kind of moves that this team needs to be made? And fortunately enough, I guess, you know, that decision was taken out of his hands. And Verbeek has come in, and Verbeek's been aggressive in moving guys out. I think a lot of fans have been at different times frustrated with how decidedly unaggressive he's been with bringing players in. You know, there were the three big free agent signings, big contextually, in Vetrano, Ryan Strome, and John Klingberg, and they've had different levels of success and all sorts of stuff like that. You know, but like, you know, like you guys, I'm sure, have been watching the waiver wires as well, and you're seeing Jacob Vrana and Eli Tolvanen and Mike Riley in Boston, and these are guys that, while with, I guess you could say, with the exception of Vrana, who's a little bit more high end, they're not making anybody anything special.
Right.
But they're the kind of players that, when you look at a competitive team, are in depth roles.
Right.
And I think that's kind of been the hard thing for Anaheim this year, for the fan base especially, is this kind of give and take, with understanding that this is a tank and we are in on Connor Bedard and Fantilli and Carlson and Michkov. And, you know, those are the guys that we are in it for this year. And it's weird because it's really nice to kind of have that very clear direction. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's also a little bit weird for, like, I mean, look, like, as sports fans, we know to believe about 35 to 40% of anything the GM says at any given time. And, you know, he did an interview a couple weeks ago where he talked about expecting the team to be closer to 500. And I just have a hard time thinking that's anything other than him giving weird optimism to the fan base. Like, no, I think this team can be a little bit more competitive. They're struggling, yada, yada, yada. But, like, there have been, like I said, those three guys he could have made. We've seen different players who have been available throughout the season. You know, there's no reason Ethan Bear couldn't be on this Ducks team right now. You know what I mean? And it's fine. I don't mind him being aggressive. I don't mind him, you know, making a decided effort to be like, we are going to be so bad this year that we can do the best job we can as far as securing the best odds we can to win the draft lottery, because the top 4 or 5 is so stacked this year. And, you know, it's been great. I like what he's done. He's been much more communicative with the fan base, which has been really nice. But I just think this is the first year of a new GM, and it's the first year in a decidedly new era of Ducks hockey. And it's just kind of weird. There's just a lot more question marks than answers.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I think has kind of created some tension. But as far as Pat Verbeek's done, the issue right now seems to be most people just want Dallas Eakins gone. And I know you guys are super happy with your coaching in Columbus. And so you don't know what that's like. I do keep waiting to see seeds explode online. You know, but it's just one of those things where I just don't know how much more he can do that isn't at a certain point kind of undercutting his kind of goal for what this season is. Yeah. And it's just a weird give and take. And, you know, frankly, Anaheim's never been in this position where it's just been like, oh, we're just going to be as bad as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they won the Stanley Cup under Brian Burke. And then the next year, Bob Murray was the GM until last year.
Yeah,
like it has been a remarkably stable franchise in that sense. And it's just led to this weird thing where it's like, oh, my God, we've got these young guys. We can kind of see the future a little bit here. Mm-hmm. But it's still a little bit farther away than I think some of us may have thought coming into the year. So, yeah.
And that's I do appreciate when the GMs can communicate with the fans and try to let them into what they're doing. I think a great example of that is when the Rangers kind of admitted that they were going, hey, we're going to tear it down now. It's going to be hard for a little bit, you know, and I think it ended up being not as hard as they sold it as, which was nice for Rangers fans. And they actually really didn't tear it down as much as they could have. But then, yeah, when they're trying to sell us, it's like, oh yeah, this, we thought this team was going to be a lot better. And like, come on, did you really? And
yeah.
And my frustration with Columbus is that there've been interviews this week with Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson where, you know, they seem to suggest that, you know, the injuries were the biggest thing for the Jackets. And we have had a ton of injuries, and that makes things really hard. But when this team was healthy, they were also playing really poorly. And so don't try to tell me that this team was better off than it was, because, no, there's still some issues here. And even with the injuries, like, that still doesn't explain playing, you know, Matthew Olivier more minutes than Kirill Marchenko. Like, that just doesn't make sense, you know, unless you are really even – that only makes sense if the coach is in on, yes, we're going to lose as much as possible. But
right.
I don't think that's what Larson's doing. I just think Larson is really stupid. but let's talk about your bad coach. It seems like, are you out on Dallas Eakins as being the answer behind the bench?
Dallas Eakins is really weird for me because I like him a lot. I personally think anybody coaching in Edmonton, especially in that era when he was there.
Yeah.
I really don't have a lot of interest or patience for holding that against you. I just don't think it's necessarily fair because, I mean, they've had good coaches, they've had great players, and it hasn't made a difference. The team up there has still just kind of been in its own way at every turn. He was great with the Marlies, which is how he got the Edmonton job. And then he came in down to San Diego, the AHL team for Anaheim, and he was great. He did a really good job working with these young players and things like that. And, you know, he's come into Anaheim and you know, like, so like my Twitter handle is like the Hockey Boomer. And like, I love that kind of like, I love certain like old school kind of
yeah
mentality things, and I love that Aiken's thing is about accountability. You know, like I think he's a great guy for a young team in so much as he's going to help these guys become professionals. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, as anybody who has recently graduated college and had a real job knows, you might've been working full time and going to college. It isn't the same thing necessarily because of the way that you have to break up your own schedule and things like right. that. And an 82 game season is a lot. You know, and for guys like Kent Johnson and, you know, Trevor Zegers, who like they come up and it's post pandemic. And so everything's weird anyways. You know, having a coach that I do think on a human level understands what it means to be a professional athlete, understands what it means to have that kind of personal accountability and commitment to each other. Mm-hmm. I love it, man. I eat that stuff up. The problem is, and this is something I've had to just kind of come to grips with, especially this year as it's gotten out of hand, is it's hard to say that with the exception of a couple of players improving, that the on-ice product has been anything other than a disaster. Mm. You know, the team doesn't look comfortable. They don't look confident. They don't look like they know what they're supposed to be doing sometimes. And it's weird, you know, for me because I think, you know, again, like for me, one of the things that is a push and pull with coaching and critiquing it is these are professional athletes. These guys have been doing this since they were six. They don't need to be taught how to skate. They don't need to be taught how to hold a stick. Like, you know what I mean? Like they understand what they're doing. These guys have played at a high level. They're talented. They're smart. And so it's about focus. It's about effort and things like that. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to feel like too much of this is Aiken's fault when the team doesn't have any fight. Mm-hmm. And then there's times where you're like, the job of the coach is to help players rise above their abilities, whether that's through system or just through, you know, human, like pumping people up and just getting them to buy in. Like, and it doesn't feel like there's really been anybody who's kind of taken that step up under Aiken's and is playing above their head. And so, you know, coming into this year, my thought was he's going to be gone by Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Based on some stuff that Verbeek has said, that doesn't seem realistic at this point.
Right.
Every week there's a different game that's like, well, surely that'll make him change his mind. And it hasn't. So, you know, I think for now it feels like Aikens is going to be gone at the end of the year. And I hope he gets another shot. I really like him. And if he's only ever just a really good AHL coach, then I hope he is personally able to find peace with that, because it's not easy to get to the AHL level.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's just, I really, really like him. And I think he has a lot to offer. I think as a player development kind of figure, he has a lot to offer. I don't know necessarily that he's the guy who is going to help turn a middling team into a good team.
Yeah.
And
I think there's something to be said for, having a reputation of being a great player development guy. Like, that's always going to find you a job somewhere. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it might hurt to know that like, you're not going to be a, you know, cup contending coach at the NHL level, but you know, you can at least have the satisfaction of coaching guys up on their way up and seeing them go on to great things later on. And that's can be a very rewarding thing in itself. And it's, you know, that's an important role in any organization to have that, but it's a different skill set to be coaching guys that have been in the league for 10 years that are making more money than you are and all that. That's just having to deal with all that. So it sounds, you know, again, like a lot of stuff is being very familiar here with me and the Larson situation. And, you know, I've said I give credit to Larson for the Jackets last year being better than expected, better than they probably should have been. But then I also feel like he's holding them back this year. But then I'm also trying to make sense in my mind of what is so different? What has gone wrong from last year to this year with him pressing the right buttons last year, not pressing the right buttons this year? Do you have any insight with Aikens as to what may have changed for his thing not working? Is this something different with the locker room makeup? Is it the lack of Getzlaff, like you said, or is it just the players needing a different voice?
I think for me, it feels like in a lot of ways, it's just kind of the natural life cycle of being a coach. Like at a certain point, your voice goes stale. Mm-hmm. And I think it is hard, I think, for a coach of Aiken's style to really get consistent buy-in when the team is underwater most nights. And I just think not having Getzlaff, not having Lindholm, not having Manson, these are guys who are very good players, but they were also integral to the identity of the franchise. Like, yep. Lindholm, for my money, is the best defenseman the team ever drafted. Like, I think there's a couple of guys you can obviously look at and be like, oh, yeah, they're already in the Hall of Fame. We can have that conversation. But as far as guys that they brought into the team and developed, Lindholm, to me, is the guy. I love him. He's incredible. It's been wonderful to watch him pop in Boston. And, he's not an overly vocal guy. He's a little bit more of a calm guy on the ice and off. But his steady 25 minutes a night of just being really good, like, it matters. Like, it's just nice to have a guy that you're like, oh, you're just really good for 25 minutes a night. Yeah. And that's cool. Or guys like Manson and Getzlaff where, like you talked about earlier, like there's just nights where the team doesn't have any fight in them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to do. Like Sam Carrick tries a little bit. Max Comtois tries a little bit. Trevor Zegras has been a little bit feistier this year than I would have expected. And it's nice, but it just doesn't feel like there's really anybody there to kind of grab them by the scruff of the neck and take them forward. And I think when you're a coach in the style that Aikens is, that's a huge issue because he needs to be able to be like, this is what we're doing, but he needs that leadership group to drag guys forward. Mm-hmm. And that's not there right now. And again, part of being a young team, I'm sure you guys are seeing this. Like, you guys are fortunate enough to have Zach Werenski, who means a lot to that franchise. He's a great player.
Yeah.
But he can only do so much on his own. And I'm not trying to upset you when I say this, but there's a certain young man in Seattle right now who I imagine would have been very helpful in this process as well.
Yeah, that could be one of the big differences for sure. Yeah.
And I think it's, and a lot of the times it feels like we look for single reasons, but I think most times it's 10 to 15 different little things that change, and guys are in different roles. Guys are in different expectations. Guys are in different places mentally, especially for a young player like Zegras, like, and Troy Terry, like, they popped last year.
Yeah.
And this year they haven't been bad by any stretch. They're not necessarily producing at the rate that they were last year, but I would argue they've both been better. Mm-hmm. But it's year two of them being good, and teams know that. You know what I mean? Like, it's easier to be like, okay, these are the guys we have to focus on. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it harder for everybody. And when there isn't kind of that institutional, just rigidity or direction, it can be very difficult for the coach to have much of an effect of anything if he's not just a straight X's and O's guy.
Mm-hmm. One last question about this team and kind of shifting gears a little bit. John Gibson, he's been bad. He's under contract for 4 more years. What do the Ducks do with the John Gibson situation? Again, with an analog to Columbus, we've got Elvis Merzlikins in the first year of a 5-year deal. He's been really bad. A couple better games lately, thankfully, but that's a big question mark. What do you do with a goalie that's struggling that has term?
Yeah, I mean, I will die on the team has failed Gibson more than the Gibson has failed the team Hill. Like, I just refuse to go backwards on that one. He's struggling. He doesn't have any support. The defense in front of him is not good. Like, Cam Fowler can't be the best defenseman on your team. I'm sorry. Like, it's just not good enough. And I think that years of watching this team just fall apart in front of him has been very difficult on him. And goalies are emotional. Goalies are basket cases in the best way. It's a very weird position. I was talking to somebody the other night. To me, it's the closest, the only comparable to being a goalie is being a pitcher.
Yeah.
Because if you're not on, it doesn't matter how good anybody else you're playing with is that night. You're screwed.
Yep.
Like, and You know, so I think for me, I hope he can find a new place. I wonder if this isn't a buyout thing at this point, just because I don't know that anybody's going to take him for four more years at $6.4 million a year. Yeah. Like, I think the goalie who was worth that contract is still in there. It's not as easy as it was last year or the year before to find it. So I don't know, you know, I think there has to be some kind of breakup in the next little bit. I just don't know how they're going to get there because that contract's awful.
Yeah, and sometimes goalies like that, they just need to change the scenery, and there's just not a solution when you're keeping them in house there. And it's weird because when it was signed too, I thought like that is a great deal, and I thought I was going to age really well because he had some amazing years early on there. Where like he is incredibly underpaid even at $6 million,
but yeah,
it just got bad, and I totally understand how that happens. And yeah, you mentioned Cam Fowler, and I think I still had it in my head. It's like, oh yeah, that's a good young defenseman. Like he's 31 now.
Yeah, he's 31.
How did that happen?
He's 31, and thank God because he still skates well. I don't know what else he does, but he skates really well.
So you know, we're all looking ahead to the draft now, and you know, it's very heavy with a lot of these really intriguing young centers, which obviously is something that the Jackets need. But you have Trevor Zegras and Mason McTavish playing center this year. Is there as much of a need, or do you not even question that? You just take Connor Bedard or Adam Fantilli and you move one of those other guys to wing? Or are the Ducks maybe a fit for Matvei Michkov, who could be a very, very great winger, but you might have to wait a few years on him? Is that something that the Ducks, do you think, can afford to do? And might that be a better fit for them than one of the centers?
So for me, when it has come to this kind of draft, like specifically this draft and having Zegras and having McTavish and even having Nathan Gaucher, who had a really nice World Juniors and looks like he can be a solid third line defensive type, you know, guy, I just kind of keep looking at Tampa Bay. And it's just like, it's weird. Like sometimes they play Steven Stamkos on the wing.
Yeah.
And nobody freaks out. Right. So maybe we should all just like have a thought about that. Like, I think at this point, if you get number one, I don't think there's a question, right? You're taking Bedard and you're calling it a day.
Sure.
If you get number two, I think the questions around Fantilli and Carlson and Michkov are really interesting. I personally really like the idea of Michkov just because looking at Minnesota and the way that Kaprizov was off and off and off and all these other guys were kind of able to develop. And then he comes over, and it's just a NOS, right? He's
instantly ready. Yeah, plug and play.
And he's exactly what that team needed as far as a kick in the pants to push him. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's a really intriguing option to me. But it is Anaheim. It's not a traditional market, and I don't know how much more patience there is. So, like, I would not begrudge anybody being like, look, it's Bedard or Fantilli.
Yeah.
You know, and even Carlson is in that conversation as well, as far as just being able to come in and start playing games right away. But like you said, Michkov's going to be a couple of years away. I think for a team like Arizona, that makes a lot of sense. For a team like Chicago, that makes a lot of sense. Like, they're not getting anywhere anytime soon.
Sure.
And the idea of, you know, Cooley Michkov is a hell of an idea to have.
Yeah.
You know, so I think for Anaheim, for me, it's you take the who you think the best player available is and you figure it out. And I also think like for a really like selfish point of view, Mason McTavish and Connor Bedard are really good buddies.
Okay. Yeah.
If you're going to be able to move Connor Bedard to the wing, might be with the guy he played World Juniors on the wing with, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like to me, it's like, oh yeah, like they already like each other. They already get along. And we can kind of have our Trevor Zegras, Troy Terry, American Lion, and our Mason McTavish, Connor Bedard, Canadian Lion, and we can just kind of keep going, man. So, you know, it's a weird thing, but I think at this point it's Connor Bedard, and then you still take the best player available. Because I don't know how you feel about it, but for me it's kind of like how everybody decides whether or not a defenseman can play on their offside when they know the defenseman. And it's like, oh, he can't do that. He's not good. Or, oh, he can do that. He's fine. And it's weird how that's what is always what changes people's opinion of whether or not you need a lefty righty is how good the guys are. And it's like, yeah, that's the same thing for forwards. Like if he's a really great center, the odds are he can still be a really good winger. Like, I don't think you know, like Trevor Zegras is playing wing right now and everybody's losing their mind. And it's just, why? He's still good. Like, playing wing doesn't mean he can't go to the middle of the ice.
Right.
It's a freewheeling game. These guys are everywhere all the time. Like, we've all got defensemen that regularly, for good or bad, end up below the other net. We know that this isn't static.
Yeah, and someone had asked last summer, you know, when Gaudreau got signed, and were asking, like, Line A, you know, oh, you know, do you will you play the left? Will you play the right or whatever? And he's like, that just matters where you set up for faceoffs. You know, when the puck's in play, we're cycling anyway. We're playing on all ends of the ice. It just doesn't matter. And I happen to agree that if a guy is a center type, that, okay, you can play him at center, but you can also play him at wing. And it's not like anyone is going to be totally lost at wing if they're a natural center.
Right.
But if there's a wing like Michkov, he's not going to be able to play center. So right. I think
Bergevin, in which case everybody should play center. It's fine.
Right. So I think with the kind of players you're talking about and at the very top of the draft like that, like, you take the best player possible. And I think Michkov might have the highest floor of any of these guys from what I'm hearing, but the ceiling for Bedard is, like, so, so high. Mm-hmm. And I think it sounds like with Fantilli and Carlson, they're not at Bedard level, but they're still, like, this is a player that can be your number one franchise type guy for the next 10 years. So you take that without hesitation. So I'm at the point, I'll be fine with any of those guys. Well, not Michkov. I want a center, and I want a guy that will be here in the next year or two.
Right.
But again, yeah, if one of those guys starts at wing, like, sure, that's fine. They can be productive. You know, Kent Johnson started at wing this year and was really good at wing. Now, if he's moving to center, I think he's fine there. Like, it can work out. So you take the good player, and then you have a coach that hopefully can tell his head from his ass and makes the best out of the situation.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, as we're seeing the game become faster and more skilled and more creative, like, it's what a lot of people want, which is moving from a top six to a top nine.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. Like, oh no, we have three guys who all need to play center, but reasonably are all really good. Whatever we're going to do, you're going to play them. What are we talking about? Like, you know, and I think there's some of the hand-wringing can get a little excessive at times, and it makes sense. Like, your team, my team, like, it's not fun right now.
Right.
So there's a lot of, like, consternation and trying to make sure that people are staying kind of on top of things. But I just think at times we can let ourselves get a little carried away in some of the minutia. And it's just like, look, if these guys are as good as they say as people say that they are, I don't care if they play goalie. It sounds like they're going to be great. It's going to be fine. Like, we spent 3 weeks talking about if Mitch Marner is going to play defense on power plays. Like, we don't have to overthink this. We can just let these problems sort themselves out down the line. Yeah. You know, I think for me, I would say Columbus is a little bit closer to competing than Anaheim is.
Okay.
I like a lot of the guys on that team. Like, I know me and you talked about this, I think a draft or two ago, just offline and stuff, but, like, I liked a lot of the little moves that they made. Yeah. Like, they did some really clever stuff. You still got Raisin Bran on there, and he's driving people crazy, as he always is going to do. But, like, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, I like a lot of the guys in Columbus. Me and the other co-host of Forever Mighty, Eddie, like, we love KJ, man. He's great. He's going to be so much fun. He was one of those guys that, like, I was so happy he went to a team I don't hate. Because it's just like, oh, yeah, man, I'm very excited to watch this guy just be weird and creative for 10 years. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think sometimes it feels like the water's so over your head, you start swinging at everything. And it's nice to just remember we're 3 years away at least from this being a serious issue.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So for now, like, let's play guys where we can or where they need to be. And the rest of it, we figure out when it matters.
Yeah.
Because, like, this team isn't making the playoffs for 2-3 years, which is fine. But if you have that luxury, get the most out of it. Be aggressive. Be experimental. Try to do different things with different guys. Like, I love Zegras on the wing because he's in on the forecheck. And he's got a really quick stick. Like, he's really good at getting in on defensemen, you know, stick checks, popping their sticks up and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't mind it. But you would think that they sent him to the Hague the way some of the fan base has reacted. It's just, it's wild to me.
Well, and just get your best players out there in as many situations as you can. You got Zegras here averaging almost 20 minutes a game. McTavish, even at 20 years old, he's playing 15 minutes a game, you know, which is a lot more than the Jackets are playing KJ, which really frustrates me. But, you know, yeah, just get him out there, try things. And, yeah, I feel like sometimes Larson and company are not experimental enough with what they've had. But all right, so we're running out of time here. So one last question. This is the movable force against the stoppable object here. But when Anaheim is 4-14-3 on the road, so they're just a little bit better on the road than Jackets are, but still pretty bad. Also have won just 3 of their last 10 games like Columbus has. What is your prediction for the game on Thursday?
Well, personally, I think it would be the funniest possible outcome if we get like a good Branson hat trick. So I am personally rooting for that.
Oh, Jesus.
That would just the ugliest hat trick possible. Because again, I love Seeds, man. He's a great dude. I love watching him melt down on life. It's so funny. And if good Branson did something cool, like he wouldn't know what to do. He might throw his phone into the river. Like, oh, you know, at this point, I would be more inclined to give it to Anaheim just because the injuries in Columbus are legit. And when it comes down to just, you know, two wet noodles swinging at each other, that's the kind of stuff where having maybe one or two of your more top-end guys can make a difference.
Yeah, yeah. Without Werenski, like, I don't know who we can keep up with that can actually defend against Zegras and McTavish and guys like that.
Yeah, so, you know.
I am going to predict for maximum pain that this game goes to a shootout.
Yes.
So both teams get points from it, and no one's happy about it.
Yep, that's perfect. I love it. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with it, man. Look, if you ask me what I thought the game was going to be, I would say it's probably going to be a 3-1 win either way, which means it'll now either be a 0-0 shootout win or it'll be some 6-5 abomination and both coaches will lose their minds. What do you mean we let in 5 goals? That's not okay. It's going to be funny. I love it.
should be entertaining for all the sickos out there. So hope you all enjoy it. All right, Steven, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate being on. Tell the listeners where they can find you online.
Yeah, like I said, on Twitter, I'm at the Hockey Boomer. I have all sorts of dumb and stupid things I say out loud there. Forever Mighty Podcast. We are doing what you're doing, just trying to make it through to the draft and hope we don't jump off a bridge before we get there. You know, so yeah, we're just trying to do some fun stuff. We're going to try to get some cool stuff doing over the next couple of weeks since Ducks hockey isn't the most interesting. Beyond that, you know, yeah, that's about it right now. So just find me on Twitter, come have fun. And, you know, if you like to make fun of the Rams, I'm all here for it.
Yeah, so be sure to check them out and check out the Forever Mighty Podcast again. Thanks again, Steven, and thanks everyone for listening.
For more content from The Cannon, check out jacketscannon.com or follow us on Twitter at CBJCannon. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Purley and the Howlin' Moons. Angela's new album, Turn Me Loose, is out now. Go to angelapurley.com for more music and show dates.